Let me set the stage and remind you of the backdrop. The past is now prologue, and that was only a few weeks ago that we actually had an insurrection at our Capitol.
There's always tension between the right of the public to know things and what prosecutors and what's necessary for the court process to go on. I'm really divided on this one.
Pandemic relief policy, a dangerous precedent, and the case of John Neville. It's all ahead in our weekly review of North Carolina politics. I'm Jeff Tiberi. This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. Glad to have you along. Happy weekend. Here for our discussion are Aisha Dew with the progressive organization Higher Heights and Clark Reamer, former chair of the North Carolina Young Republicans. Welcome back.
Great to be here, Jeff.
This conversation was recorded Friday morning via Zoom. State lawmakers have voted to appropriate more than half of the roughly $4 billion that Congress approved for North Carolina in its latest relief package. Big ticket items, $1.6 billion for schools, $500 million to help renters avoid eviction, nearly $100 million to bolster vaccine distribution. On Thursday, the governor called on the General Assembly to spend another $700 million in state funds. Reminder, the state has about $5 billion cash on hand. Cooper wants to send more money to schools and give educators from kindergarten through PhD programs one-time bonuses. Here's a question. What's the most notable provision approved by the legislature or proposed by the governor that came out of this week? Aisha?
I think it's, I don't know if it's the most notable, but I think it's really important right now, and that is definitely taking care of our schools and teachers. I have friends who are parents. I have friends who are educators, principals, etc. And this has just been a really, really, really hard time for everyone as far as not being in school, being in school, in different spaces, of course, teachers also dying of COVID. So we need for space safe. Safe spaces for our children and also for our teachers and their families. So I think definitely reaching out to or providing support for the schools is really important.
I think one thing that's very notable in the governor's proposal is that he noted that teachers were the only state employees who haven't had raises over the last 2 years, which is, of course, because he fought the General Assembly over the amount of those raises and ended up vetoing those budgets that provided for at least some raises for teachers. If the budgets that had been passed by the General Assembly were enacted into law, there would have been raises for those teachers. But, and I think we're nationally in a huge argument about how and how best to safely get kids back in school. The data seems to be trending that there is not much transmission between students and teachers, and that it can be done fairly safely. I know there was a large debate about that on the Senate floor yesterday, but we also have the CDC and Dr. Fauci and others saying that they think we can go back to school safely, and I think that's a great thing, and we need to do that and close. You know, a lot of learning has been lost over the last year, which was perhaps inevitable because of the pandemic, and we had to respond to it. But now we've got to close that gap and get people back on track, because if we don't, we're going to be paying for it for a long time.
So real quick on the back to school piece, just to make sure we're all on the same page here. The data is trending in the right way. The recommendations are for more students to be back in school with more of an effort for hybrid learning, maintaining social distance, but not for everybody to go back to school at this point. That's my read on it. Is that where you are with it? Aisha and Clark. Clark, you go first.
Yeah, I think so. I think it looks like really through middle school, we can get people almost back to normal with some amount of enhanced health and safety provisions. And then, you know, we're looking at some major programs going forward. But I think especially by next fall, we're going to have over half of the United States hopefully vaccinated by that point. If we can hit 1 million people, the 1 million people a day metric that's been out there. So hopefully by the fall, by next year, we'll be in a place to return to real learning.
Well, you know, I'll just say that one of the impressive pieces I've seen from some other states is also just prioritizing teachers to get the vaccine. I know that we all have different programs and different processes, and also North Carolina is actually one of the best at getting out the vaccine overall. But my hope is that we can prioritize those who need to take care of our children at some point in this process also.
All right, Aisha, let me get back to something briefly that Clark mentioned, and that's, I guess, just acknowledging the governor's role in some of the budgeting over the last few years. So Democratic Governor Roy Cooper has vetoed the last five budgets that have been approved by Republican majorities at the state legislature. Yesterday, as he called on the legislature to spend an additional or appropriate an additional roughly $700 million, the legislature was also in the process of appropriating a large sum, several billion dollars, a couple billion dollars of this federal relief. I'm wondering if you think it would be beneficial for the governor to perhaps acknowledge a little bit more either what's happening at the legislature or his role in preventing, to an extent, teachers from having received raises.
Well, you know, I have to say that I'm glad to see at this point people are really coming together to try to keep people safe and healthy and alive across our state. What I will also say is that Governor Cooper has done, I think, a tremendous job of trying to support the people when we weren't in this level of crisis and peril. So he rejected the budgets in the past, vetoed the budgets in the past, simply because it didn't fully support the people in the North Carolina in the most robust way. And so we still have the dynamic with the legislature and the governor. And so hopefully we'll be able to, I would say, all recognize each other, but support each other in giving the most robust support to our members of our state.
All right, let's move to Capitol Hill, where Republicans find themselves at something of an extended crossroads. House Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia was removed from congressional committees on Thursday due to inflammatory social media posts, which she made prior to her election to Congress. Formerly a QAnoner, she also has supported the execution of Speaker Nancy Pelosi and has said that some school shootings were done by the government. There's more, but we don't have time. All of North Carolina's U.S. House Republicans voted against punishing her. I want to play a cut for you from U.S. House Representative Ted Budd.
This isn't about agreeing or disagreeing with the comments. This is about Democrats abusing their power and using it to cancel. This sets a very dangerous precedent.
What's the more dangerous precedent? Punishing for peddling conspiracy theories and supporting acts of violence against elected officials, or doing nothing? Clark?
Well, I think there's a couple of things we need to look at here. First, these statements, while frankly insane, were mostly made in the time frame of 2016, 2017. They were known during her election and somewhat baked into who she is, you know, was as a political candidate. For the first time ever, to choose to take away a minority member's committee assignments, which are traditionally the privilege of the minority to set where their people are going to go, I think is something that may come back to haunt them. There are other members who have made conspiracy theory and inflammatory comments before, and there will be in the future. Now we have a precedent that the majority can punish those members outside of an ethics or legal process, but just because, you know, normally the only thing the majority has is they can refuse to seat a member. That's well within the power of Congress. But this is new, and I think that something that there'll be retaliation at some point the next time another member says something regrettable.
At the risk of equivocating, is there anybody on the left or anyone else on the right who has said or posted things anywhere near parallel to what we've seen and read from Marjorie Taylor Greene, talking about executing Nancy Pelosi, indicating that the government, I mean, it was interesting there, right? Ted Budd is defending her. In effect, Taylor Greene 5 years ago said that it was Ted Budd who pulled off some of these school shootings as part of the government. Have we heard this rhetoric from anybody else, right or left?
I think we have to some extent. I think there were several members, and I can't remember who have suggested, you know, in the 90s that the CIA was directing crack cocaine into the inner cities. So that would be, to me, a similar, again, saying the government is taking these actions against American people. I think we've seen similar levels of anti-Semitism from some of the things that Representative Ilhan Omar has said. So I think there are, unfortunately, a few cases, and anytime you have such large bodies, you run the risk of having some people that just aren't fully on the same page as everyone else or with reality.
So quick follow-ups, just to answer the question. I think you ostensibly have, but more dangerous precedent, punishing her or not punishing her?
Ultimately, given the age of this statement, I would say the way she was punished is more dangerous for the future of the institution.
So I'll just jump in here and say that I think it's more dangerous not to punish her. Let me set the stage and remind you of the backdrop, right? The past is now prologue, and that was only a few weeks ago that we actually had an insurrection at our Capitol for the first time since, what was it, 1812? I keep repeating it, and so then I forget it because it's so unrealistic. And so it's not just that you said something, it's that people acted on it. They actually, just a few weeks ago, wanted to kill Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and as you mentioned, the members of the squad, who actually happened to mostly be minority women, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Presley, actually had her panic buttons disabled in her office from the previous evening. When you look at Cori Bush, she currently feels unsafe and wants to move her office away from this woman after she actually made threatening comments in the hallway while unmasked during the middle of a pandemic. So this is not simply a personality issue. This is not simply something about comments that were made that didn't age well. These were comments that were made that have unfortunately aged appropriately 3 weeks ago with an insurrection held at the Capitol. So I would like to see a strong democracy. I would like to see us uphold the ground floor of the republic. And so it is very challenging to see punishment take place for any of our members of Congress. I am, though, concerned about whether or not we can actually maintain our members of Congress through their livelihoods and lives. And so when there's a call to execute, when there is a these mass conspiracy theories that these people didn't die. And I don't even, I can't even string together all the conspiracy theories and keep up with them. But when you still have the parents of Parkland trying to salvage peace and maintain their lives after losing their children and being told that they didn't, that's a little far. It's more than a little far. So I think, unfortunately, we're at the place where we had, I'll keep bringing it up, radical reconstruction, because we realized that there was a need for our country to say that we had a president had been assassinated, that people decided to leave the union. People are trying to leave the union right now, aren't they? So what are we going to do to maintain the soul of our nation and our democracy? And I think it is, we have to address these issues so that people think it's not okay.
Finally, let's turn now to the saga of John Neville. In December 2019, Neville was in Forsyth County Sheriff's custody when he had a medical episode. Officers restrained him. In video captured at the time, Neville says, "I can't breathe," a total of 28 times. He died at a local hospital 3 days later. Last summer, 5 former detention officers and a nurse from the detention facility were charged with involuntary manslaughter. Forsyth County prosecutors tried to keep that video that I mentioned from the public. They lost in court. Then this week, the prosecution moved to seal Neville's death records, arguing it would threaten a fair trial for the defendants. Does that argument hold water for you? Aisha?
I think at this point, we just need to have all of the records. Let me be clear that our justice system definitely needs a lot of improvement. And by that, I mean, sometimes officers are actually doing what's actually in their right in the protocol, which means, therefore, we need to change what the protocol looks like when it comes to saving people's lives. They're there to basically hold people, right, if necessary, according to the law, but that doesn't mean that people deserve to die in custody of law enforcement unnecessarily. So it's different from place to place. I've been involved in a lot of conversations in Charlotte-Mecklenburg about what that looks like, and it looks different from space to space. But that was unfortunate. Someone who did not need to die died. And so I hope that they will, that the evidence will be shared to the fullest extent that it can, and that people have an opportunity to see how this works, and that more importantly, there is an opportunity to improve the system so this does not continue to happen.
There's always tension between the right of the public to know things and what prosecutors and what's necessary for the court process to go on. I'm really divided on this one. I think that it, you know, you also have a statement from the family expressing, I think from the victim's family, expressing support for Jim O'Neill and saying that they support what he's doing as far as engaging in this process and working with them as victims. So I guess we'll have to see what comes out, how the trial goes. I think a lot of this will be determined on... once this moves into the trial phase, is the trial scene is largely fair and well executed by the Forsyth Attorney's Office.
Clark Reamer is a former chair of the North Carolina Young Republicans. Aisha Dew is the political director with the organization Higher Heights. Enjoy your weekends.
You too.
Thank you.
If you find yourself seeking out our weekly conversations to stay informed, consider doing us a favor. Share the podcast with someone or leave us a review wherever it is you downloaded this episode. Those reviews help the podcast reach other people who might just benefit from a little more state politics in their lives. By now, you probably know about Tested and Embodied, the other very good podcasts from WUNC. Well, we've got another for you. Make sure you give a listen to Pauly. It's a special 4-episode release from WUNC. It's all about Pauly Murray, an activist, lawyer, Black, queer, Southern woman. If you've heard of her, listen. If you haven't heard of Pauly Murray, definitely listen. You get the idea. Download it. All right, one last note for you. I've got an interview scheduled with the new Lieutenant Governor, Republican Mark Robinson, early next week. That's for your consumption come Tuesday afternoon. Until then, for Aisha and Clark, I'm Jeff. Wear a mask and enjoy your weekend.